It is Sunday morning. We bring in the professor, Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants. Well, good morning.
Good morning, Marty.
All right, you heard the numbers. The flickering hopes continue on.
Well, those numbers are, they are what they are, but as you said, there is hope. We just got to take care of business in our end and win today. You know, it's one at a time. It's the old cliches now, Marty. One at a time, do everything we can to win today's ball game and keep pushing forward. That's all you can do.
How do you explain the Arizona dominance here? I mean, 8-1, and, you know, we go back a long way watching teams come in, and you got him 5 shutouts here. You got to go back to the Cubs of 1938 and Lon Warnke and Charlie Root and people like that, to see a team that dominated a franchise like the Giants
right.
5 times at home. Well, how do you explain this?
Yeah, it's hard to explain. I mean, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is you'd say, well, they really know how to pitch our guys.
Yeah.
Because I think Steve Deckard told me, you know, a couple of days ago that the our batting average against and the way they've pitched against us here, as you just alluded to, has just been unbelievable, some sort of record. And you'd say, well, you know, they know our hitters. They know how to pitch them. They pitch them well. But we seem to score runs of the same pitchers in their ballpark,
yeah,
which is a little bit more of an offensive park. So it's hard to explain, but that happens over the course of the year. Sometimes there's teams you just have a difficult time with, and obviously they like playing here.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this before. Hello, Dennis Danziger. There he is. Dennis is, I think, retiring. He said he's up at that souvenir booth at 134. He's been a Candlestick for years. I think he said he's got 8 or 9 more days. I think that means he's retiring.
Wow.
But he's been around for a while. He just walked by the bunker here and waved to us. Well, you look at the Diamondbacks and the way they play in general. You look at the way the Giants play. Is it a matchup thing here for this thing?
Well, you know, they do play hard. I have to give them credit over there. They have a bunch of grinders against the guys that like to play baseball. You
yeah.
can tell when you play them that they there's no quit. And, you know, they have some nice balance. I think pitching's been their problem this year, but they score runs. I think they're, what, second in the league offensively. So they're able to put runs on the board. You know, they can steal a base. They're a tough team. They've had a good year, and we've certainly had our challenges with them. And it can be, as you said, you know, the matchups comes down to matchups.
Yeah.
Some other pitchers just match up well against our hitters.
All right, 8-1 for the Diamondbacks, and I guaranteed last night you will score today off Jeremy Hellickson. And one of our questions at Baseball Marty or at 808 KMBR with Raf is, and you can get an autographed picture of me or a Marty Lurie bobblehead, but you got to give me the inning the Giants are going to score today and who's going to score the run. All right.
Oh, that's
you're not getting shut out today. I guaranteed that last night.
That's great. We like that guarantee.
Right.
How about multiple innings? Can you go multiple innings
no,
on the runs?
I only have so many bobbleheads here.
Okay.
So you got to get the first run. They're going to score what inning, and who's going to score it? So I haven't seen the lineup yet, so I can't tell you what. But I'm probably going with something like Duffy. I think.
You're going to go after your own bobblehead.
Well, I have to set the stage for it,
sure.
You know, so to, you know, to
sure.
match me.
I won't make a prediction because I don't want to take a fan's bobblehead.
Right. Okay. Well, you got one anyway.
Yes.
All right. Yesterday was something, you know, we look at the game of baseball, and, you know, when the catcher steps out in front of the plate and goes through his signs to the infield, I mean, their signs look like 17 signs. He touches everything possible he could touch. Can you read them? I mean, you must know these signs, but what is, and you don't have to give your signs away, but in general, what's the one people are looking for, and what is he trying to
tell?
Well,
he typically comes out with runners on first and second,
right,
and he's going through his signs to let the infielders know whether if they steal, are we going to throw to third or are we going to throw to second base? And, you know, over the years, we've all been in this game a long time. There's a lot of universal signs. I mean, first touch, last touch, an indicator. And when they come out and they do it a lot, yeah, you could pick them up. But sometimes it doesn't matter if you know what they're going to do. Sometimes it doesn't work to your advantage. There's really nothing you can do to take advantage of it. So a lot of that is academic. They go through their signs, and you may know what they are. It's nice to have them because, you know, once in a while it can work to your advantage. But a lot of times there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it anyway. So it doesn't help.
Well, he goes through 10 signs or 12 signs. You
right.
know,
well,
I mean, really, it's to me, I'm trying to watch, And I'm saying the infielder's following this thing, and the catcher's going to touch his mask, his shin guards, his right. chest protector, the other side, his shin guards again. I mean, really.
Well, they're trying to throw off the other team, right?
But as does his team even understand it?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's usually something simple. So he's going through 10 signs. It's not like if he touches four different spots, okay. something's on. It's the first touch, or it's okay. the last touch, or okay. it's the first touch after the glove. So it really is simple. It just looks a lot more complicated.
I laugh every time because you see a catcher go out there. It's just incredible. This year, something that we've talked about before, and we talk about it up in the press box too, throws to home plate or throws to third. You know, we grew up with the great arms, and we see some great arms today. You know, we've talked, you've coached third before and talked to Mike Quatty about it and different Flan about it. You know, there's certain arms you respect all the time. But I've seen lately the arms coming home. Not great. From medium depth to, you know, all around the outfield. Do players work on this during the year? I know in spring training, I love it to watch it.
Right. Well, you know, infield obviously is one thing that comes to mind. That was something that was always a part of the game. And we've talked about this in the past. You take infield and they say, well, you take infield, you know, to get the guys ready to play. Well, infield really wasn't for the infielders because the infielders take ground balls and they throw to bases every day. The infield and outfield that you take before the game was more for the outfielders to make the throw to home, to keep their arms ready to make that throw, and for the catchers to throw to second base during the infield. So it's called infield, but it really was more important for the outfielders and the catchers. And in today's game, nobody takes infield. So, you know, what do teams do? They have their outfielders come out early. Or like Roberto Kelly does, sometimes they come out early. Sometimes he has, well, not sometimes, every day he has a routine where he'll go to second base and he'll hit ground balls and fly balls to the outfielders during batting practice, just as I do as an infield coach to the infielders, and they throw to second base. So they're working on their throw, they're working on their touch. That's how they get that done. Otherwise, the coaches usually take the players out early and have them make their throws. But, you know, talking about this in the game of baseball, the way it's evolved, you know, it's amazing to me that infield, and sometimes we neglect the defensive side of the game. It's all about the offense, and guys are in that cage all day long, but they're not always on the field working on their base running, their defense, and other parts of their game that guys used to work on quite a bit more in the past.
Why has that changed? What do you think?
Well, I think the money has changed a lot of it. Obviously, they're paid to put up numbers. When they go to, you know, arbitration or they go to do their contract, they don't say, well, I threw out five guys at the plate, and they say, okay, well, here's an extra $2 million, right? they look at the back of the baseball card, and the offense is number one. So, you know, I think there's things that you can do in the game to improve that, whether it's pitchers PFP practice or just have the guys come out more routinely to throw, you can get the work in. And I think baseball, you know, would benefit from an emphasis on some of these other areas of the game.
Okay. All right. Well said. You know, the mountain is ahead of everybody, and I call it the mountain of getting over that mountain and getting to the World Series championship, as the Giants have done three times in 5 years. If a manager called you up and who's never been through this before, never run that gauntlet from the wild card game to the seventh game of a World Series, which when we sit back and think about it, it is incredible. It's an incredible journey. What advice would you give?
Going through it? Well, you know, the probably one of the first things you have to do is set up your roster correctly. I mean, once you get into the playoffs, you know, how many pitchers you're going to have on your roster. You got to calculate the off days that you have in between. Obviously, we have a lot of off days in between the playoffs. So if your first game's a three games, you know, best of five, usually play two, you have an off day. Then sometimes you have another off day and you play one. So you don't need as many pitchers as you might need if you're playing, you know, three, four games in a row. So what kind of weapons? You want speed on the bench. You know, you want weapons offensively on the bench that you can utilize. You talk about, you know, the bullet,
Darren Ford
we used to have in playoff scenarios. You know, in a one-run game, his presence on that roster can really come into play. But, You know, it's probably the biggest thing is you're going to go with the guys that have got you there, the guys that are playing well, your horses, and you're going to try to get them involved in the game as much as possible. You know, your long guys and the guys that are not the top pitchers on your staff, you're probably not going to use them unless the game's out of hand, because every game is so important.
Yeah, every inning is important.
Absolutely. Innings, games, and you know, I think you need to be proactive, not reactive. You know, you want to have your game plan, and you want it when a situation presents itself for you to take advantage of. I think you want to go for it. You don't want to miss your opportunities, whether you know you want to squeeze a run in because you want to get the lead, or you want to hit and run because you have the right matchup on the field. You get the guy that can put the ball in play, and you have speed at first base, and you don't want those moments to go by and say, darn it, I should have hit and run there to try to create a run.
Yeah, great point. Ron Wotus with us, the professor. But it takes a little bit of nerve to do that, because if you do it and it doesn't work, people start looking at you.
Well, yeah, that's the hard thing. I mean, obviously you have to know your personnel, and you have to decide whether you're going to just leave it in the player's hand, or you're going to help nudge the game along. You're going to take that risk. You're going to take that chance to try to create. Maybe you're usually facing good pitchers, you know, guys, the Kershaws of the world, and hard to score runs. So are you going to sit back and wait for three hits, or are you going to try to nudge the game along and take advantage? So I think it really boils down to, you know, your personnel, and, you know, as coaches and managers, you know your players pretty well, and just don't let those moments pass when you have a chance to do something that could benefit you.
All right, great answer. You know, you look at the three world championships, the Giants have had the starters. You know, Bumgarner last year was the guy, but in other years you've had combinations. The bullpen you've always had, that core group has been terrific.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see how this whole playoff and how it works out. To see who the pitcher will be to go the 40 innings. It's a grind, man, to get through it, isn't it?
It is a grind, you know, and they're not easy decisions. You know, you want to keep the guys rested. You want to keep them healthy. You don't want to overwork a guy, right? You don't want to say, well, he's our best pitcher. We're going to pitch him three times in this short series to have our best guy in the mound. Well, in theory, yes, you would like to do that. But, you know, how is he feeling? How is he throwing the ball? What are your other options? You know, how dominating is he against the other teams? There's a lot of decisions to make. And, you know, I was talking about the offensive side, but the defensive side, the pitching, how you handling your pitching is the same scenario. You know, don't pass up the moments when you need to shut down their rally. You might bring, like Boach did, Jeremy Affeldt, one of your late inning guys, in earlier in the game to squelch the rally.
Yeah, we'll see if they do it. It's fun to watch it, and you're not out of it yet, and who knows, but you guys mastered it. You figured it out. Brings us to the other question this week. There's been a lot of debate about it, and we've talked about it on the show, and that is the validity and the fairness of the one game. You're in the playoffs, you're in, and you have that one game to see. Now, last year you were there. You have that one game to see if you're going to go forward. People are talking about a doubleheader the first day, and then the next day, you know, obviously a third game if you need it. Talking about maybe shortening the season a little bit so, you know, you can get, you know, you don't have that many days off. What do you think about it?
Yeah, well, yeah, the doubleheader idea doesn't resonate real well with me in a short playoff scenario. I think it should be scratched off the table. I think what makes most sense, obviously, is to shorten the season by a few games, because I do agree with the people that say a one-game playoff is not enough.
Okay.
And I agree with that. Now, we've benefited from it. When Bum pitched against Pittsburgh, we won that game. But it's not like football. How many games they play? 16, 8, how many games they play? So every game's a one-game play. In baseball, we play 162 games, and now you're going to put it down to one game. And typically that game can be won by the best pitcher on the mound. So it's not a representation of the best team, per se, if you have the right matchup. And there's a lot of variables that enter into that. So, you know, having said that, I do believe that it should be the best of five. Even the wild card team should be a best of five series. And I don't know any other way to do that other than to shorten the season or have a few more doubleheaders during the regular season to keep the same amount of games, but give you a better opportunity to stretch out the playoffs and World Series without getting it any later into the winter, because we don't need to go any longer with the season.
All right, so you go more than just one game. You even go further, best of five.
Best of five.
Wow.
At least a best of three. Okay. Well, let's say that. At least two games. You know, the best out of three would work much better than one game.
Okay. You get into this idea. The other criticism of it is that the team that's waiting has to wait. Perhaps the season ends on Sunday. They probably have to wait until Friday, at least Friday or maybe Saturday, to get their playoff series underway. Does that affect baseball that much?
I think it does. You know, I think baseball, unlike other sports, you're used to playing every single day, and usually a day off, guys are really refreshed. You see it with performances, right? A guy's playing every day. You give him one day off, he comes out swinging the bat great the next day. It can really rejuvenate you. It's been my experience as a player, whenever I had more than one day off, you know, not playing in the game. If you're working out, it's one thing, but you know, multiple games, two and three games, you just don't have the same sharpness that you have when you're playing every day. But is it a deterrent not to improve the playoff scenario? I don't think so. I think that if they had to wait, you know, 4 days, it would not be the end of it. You're going to work out. You can do things to keep them sharp. Your pitchers can throw to hitters. So I wouldn't think that would be the most important thing to say. It's too long to wait.
Okay. All right. The other thing, I like getting your opinion on this because you've been through it. They've talked about reseeding the teams after the wild card play-in game. Now, this year, let's say Pittsburgh, the Cubs, let's say that's it. And the winner then goes against the Cardinals because they would have the best record. But maybe they have a better record. The wild card team has a better record than the Mets and the Dodgers.
Right.
So maybe, you know, you're taking the two best teams and reseeding them against the lesser teams. Is that fair?
Wow. Well, that changes a lot more than just trying to improve the, you know, the one game wild card. That's tough. I don't know if it's fair. I know it's hard for people to accept change. And when you have a division winner and all of a sudden you get dropped in the seed, I'd have to give that a little more thought. It's an interesting thought. And if your record is the best, it's the best. I mean, that's the way they're seeded now, right? The best record plays the
wild
team,
card.
It plays the
wild,
you know, exactly. So I'd have to give that some thought, but that's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, well, this is all coming. You know, Rob Manfred says, we're going to look at everything. And with the internet and with Twitter and all the things, you get an idea. And within 10 seconds, the idea is now read by 10 million people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different world.
Sure.
So let's see how this plays out, because we'll see how it does this year. We just passed an anniversary for the Giants, and that was the home run that Brian Johnson hit against the Dodgers. And you were there for that. Tell us about that day. It was an amazing. I saw it at Candlestick.
Yeah, it was what a great game, great moment for Brian Johnson and for the Giants. I actually was managing in San Jose back in the day, and I had the opportunity to come up the last month of the season as an extra coach and traveled with the team. So I was on the bench that day to watch that ball game, and what a great ball game! I mean, for them to get out of the bases loaded jam before Brian hit the home run to win the game with Eddie Murray at the plate, one of the, you know, the best RBI guys in the game at that time, bases loaded, I think it was nobody out, infield in, and he hits a ball to Jeff Kent, home the first double play, and ended up getting out of the inning. That alone right there with the season on the line was a tremendous defensive job getting out of that with one of the best hitters in the game. And then for BJ to come up and hit the home run, just electric. I remember it. You know, there's been a lot of great moments here, but that's right there at the top of the list.
Yeah, moment at Candlestick, and I think 56,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
It was an amazing day. Well, we had an incident the other day, very interesting. Now, you're in the replay guy, and of course, Sean Dunston and Chad Chopp are there as well. But we had three things that happened on one play. You had the ball that Osich got on the side of the mound. He threw it past Belt. He couldn't catch it. But the runner was out of his lane. You know, he's supposed to run in that 45-foot lane going to first base. The ball went down the right field line. It looked like it may have touched the fingernail of a fan. The ball then bounced back. They tried to score the run. The throw to the plate that Posey made a great play on tagged him, and he was called safe. So now the replay starts. And you tell me, I mean, really, we all saw it, a very interesting play. From your perspective, where did you begin? How did you try to sort it out?
Yeah, a lot going on, no question about it. That was as difficult as a replay play that we've had to look at. And as you said, you know, the runner running out of the line going to first, where Osich was on the play, usually the runner is not going to affect the throw, so they will not call him out on where he's running. Typically, okay. You know, it comes from the catcher or the pitcher that's close to the first baseline. Now you throw the ball, and he has to interfere with the play. The runner didn't interfere in the play, so we really weren't concerned with that at that point in time. You know, the big thing was we thought there was fan interference, and the runner was called he called safe at home, correct? He was called safe at home. And on the field, in the dugout, the runner looked safe at home. We didn't think at that point in time that he would even be out. But you learn a lesson with this, because if you challenge the fan interference, okay, we could lose the out. The umpires would then say, okay, fan interference, let's place the runners at second and third, okay, and we would lose the out at home plate. Because I don't think they would try to send him home. But now our video replay guy say, hey, fan interference was questionable, but he's out at home plate. So the thing that we have to do is get all the information on both plays before you challenge one, which can be tricky. Because if we challenge the wrong one, we're gonna hurt ourselves. So we were able to challenge the play at the plate. Got the call reversed to be an out at home plate, and now Brian Price with the Reds went out and challenged the fan interference, because if he got that correctly, they actually could have placed that runner back to third base. In the umpire's judgment, where would the runners be? He could have said, well, with the fan interference, if there's no fan interference, they wouldn't have sent the runner home. We're going to put those runners on second and third with one out, and we would have lost the out. So Brian Price lost his challenge. They said in New York that there was no fan interference, which really worked in our favor, because I heard some people say that they thought it was fan interference.
Wow. So just so I'm clear, great answer on this stuff, because I could just imagine, you know, of course, this is now, you know, in the battlefield, you know,
yes.
this is a battlefield commission going on here. The bullets are flying over you at that moment. You don't have a lot of time. But if you challenge the play at the plate, and while that scenario is unfolding and they see fan interference, let's say you don't challenge it, which you didn't.
Right.
And they see it. Can they make that call on your challenge at the plate?
Well, they look at it. I've been told whenever they look at a replay, they're going to look at the whole play.
Okay.
So the umpires already know whether there was fan interference or there wasn't, or what the play was at the plate. So they have time to put their heads together, too, and see how are we going to best handle this situation. Because I'm telling you, as you said, it sounds simple now, but in the moment, and you have 30 seconds to decide, and you don't know what they're gonna say in New York. You know, it's not conclusive a lot of these times, whether it's fan interference or he's out at home plate. It gets extremely complicated. And it has really changed the game, this replay stuff.
Well, great answer. Yeah, I'm watching it. It was like a legal question for me. You know, is A, if you get A right, you go to B, and then,
right.
You know,
right.
What's the verdict? I mean, really, it was interesting.
And you usually have time to study as a lawyer, don't you?
Yeah.
Legal questions, to sit down and give it some thought, or, you know, speak to their. So this happens in real time, and, you know, 30 seconds, you're just supposed to decide which way you want to go. And it's hard because now the replay guys, for defense for Sean and Chop, how difficult their job is. You know, everybody at home's watching on their TVs. You know, it's like watching a football game. Was he in bounds? Was he out of bounds? Well, that's a little simpler to make a ruling on than it is when you're in a replay booth. You have 30 seconds to look at two plays, get all the angles, and then say, hey, what should we challenge? What should we not challenge? Right. Difficult play.
Yeah, great job. Chad Chop is going to be on with us today.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's
good.
On with us on our walk down to the public house, the interview with Chad Chop.
You don't have Sean? Sean won't come on?
Sean doesn't like to talk about the replay stuff.
No?
No.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Yeah, he'll talk about anything else. He always comes up with good questions. questions.
You're right. He does talk about anything else. Yeah, Sean, if you're listening, we have to get you on here.
Yeah, and he'll talk about anything. You know, and he's always got good historical
Absolutely.
Questions, too.
I
like that as well. One thing, before we go to a break here, Jarrett Parker just hit a shot this year, this week, and Pollock pulled it back in center field. And it made me think about, to ask you, great catches for you or great moments with the glove in the outfield? Anything come to mind?
Yeah. Well, you tend to remember the ones that go against you more than the ones that work in your favor. But well, most recently, the catch Hunter Pence made in the playoff game at the wall, jumping up. I think they made a bobblehead of that catch that was really an important play in that game, as they always are. On a personal note for Matt Kame, his perfect game. Blanco's catch, diving catch in right center field to preserve a perfect game. Those are the two most recent that come to mind. And, wow, you know, they have a huge significance to them. And Pollock's was a great catch. But the significance at that point in time really makes the play stand out.
Yeah, yeah, it is, the moment, what it means. But this is one that, you know, we've seen it on TV with other games where they go over the wall and bring it back. We saw one with the White Sox through the wall. Hit the guy's glove, and it was like he slam dunked it over the wall. But this one, he did hit his wrist on the wall, and he did bring it back. It
and
was
he held,
pretty,
and he held on to it, you know. And you have me thinking about this, so I have to go to the negative side here. And the catch that we didn't make that really you still remember was down in Florida with Jose Cruz Jr., who played Gold Glove right field for us the whole year. Nobody played right field better than Jose Cruz Jr. in this ballpark. And in the ninth inning, when they ended up beating us in the final game, the first ball of the game, Conine hits the fly ball to right. Routine catch for him, moving towards the line. Conine stops running, and he dropped the ball. And that that's baseball, and that led to the winning run.
Wow. Well, all right, we'll take a break. We'll go to school with the professor when we come back. The plays at second base, we saw Gong of Pittsburgh, his season ends. Big investment in a player like that. Is the rule going to be changed here where you go out of the lane with your fingernail touching the bag, but you're really going for the fielder? And how could he avoid it? We saw one the other night with Goldschmidt over the bag, and Tomlinson almost had some trouble there. So we'll go to school with the professor. He'll explain it right after this in the Sports Leader.